This episode is brought to you by Xero. What if you could actually hear what's happening in your sales appointments? Most contractors invest thousands in leads, training, and ride-alongs, yet still have no idea what's really being said at the kitchen table. Xero pulls back the curtain. It's an AI-powered platform that records, transcribes, and analyzes in-home sales conversations so you can coach with real data and finally uncover the why behind your close rates. Xero helps contractors take total responsibility, control their time, and scale what works fast. Sales leaders using Xero are increasing revenue by 20%, close rates by 36%, and ticket sizes by 8%. Ready to take action? Visit Xero.ai. That's Xero.ai to learn how Xero can help support your journey to becoming a wealthy contractor.
You've been in business as long as I have. You've seen this come again. It's come during different areas. I kind of call it the make versus take market. And we were most definitely in a take market. We've been in a market before, but now we're in a make market. There are aggregators out there. There is lead gen, but we have to be in a make market. We have to make those leads occur rather than taking the business. So I think that's where it's becoming a lot of the conversation around marketing, and it's become to get more expensive because we're fighting, but that's typical in a make market.
Have you ever felt like there's a secret club of successful contractors and you're left outside? Want in? Well, you just found the entry door. Welcome to the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Each episode, we pull back the curtain, revealing the stories, strategies, and secrets that top leaders use to grow their home improvement business and enjoy more success, more wealth, and more freedom. Discover more at thewealthycontractor.com. Now let's get into today's episode.
All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Back with me today is Vince Nardo. Vince, welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Just for those of you who maybe missed the last episode with Vince, quick background on Vince. He's one of the founders of Reborn Cabinets, a family business out of Southern California that grew into this monster business that was in how many states were you guys in?
Five
states. And then they were acquired by a big group, and then they tapped Vince because he was president of Reborn. They tapped him to be president of the new company, which was Dreamstyle Remodeling, which they kind of put all of these companies together, and they did $250 million-ish in revenue. And Vince knows a little bit about the home improvement industry.
Been around the block a little bit.
A little bit, right? Yeah. So you guys sold more in a week than, you know, a lot of companies will sell in like a year. Not that that's always a good thing, and no judgment. That's not that it's good or it's bad. It's just that's a lot of home improvements in 1 week.
It's a lot of home improvements in a week. Absolutely.
Yeah. How do you get to that point? Like how when you guys were growing Reborn, I know you were very focused on growth and really building something big. What was your thinking? What was your like motivation behind that?
For the listeners, we weren't always that big, right? There was a day when we were doing, I mean, I remember back in the day when we used to joke around and our big milestone for the month was to complete 60 projects. We're like, if we can get to 60, we've made it, right? And now today they're doing thousands a month. But I think the motivation for me really was, it came from a couple areas. First one was just personal achievement, right? I wanted to make something that was a legacy for my parents. My parents had started it. And the other reason too was, you know, if you're not growing, you're dying. And we wanted to keep the momentum going, wanted to keep the team engaged. We wanted them to always be looking at what's coming tomorrow. And at some point, it just gets a momentum of itself. You know, if you do the right thing and you have the right people and you have the right plan, it just kind of self-propels itself. And that's really how we got to be so large. I'm sure there's a lot more tactical things we did in there, but from an overall standpoint, that was really the reasoning.
Yeah. You know, the big topic right now, it's back again, and it's been back for probably about a year, is leads. And, you know, how do you drive so many leads
Like, again, I mean, you do more in a week than a lot of companies will do in a year. And they struggle to find leads every week, every month. But you guys were, I mean, you had leads coming in enough so that you were doing $5 million a week.
You have to think of your business in certain ways. And I think the lucky thing we had when we started the company, or my parents started the company back in 1983, is it was a sales and marketing company. You know, it wasn't a kitchen company. It wasn't a bath company. It wasn't a window company. It wasn't a remodeling company. It was truly a sales and marketing company. And I think that's where a lot of, you know, smaller businesses, when people start these things, is they forget to realize that, is that you've got to realize that the product you do is secondary to who you really are. And you have to be a sales and marketing, or better put, a marketing and sales machine.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we saw ourselves. And everything, the primary focus of everything we did was geared around marketing and sales.
Yeah. You know, people don't understand that this is, it may look like a home improvement business. It may look like you sell kitchens or bathrooms, but really these are direct sales companies, and direct sales companies require lead flow every single day.
And also direct response.
Right.
Marketing companies, you know, we're not doing branding. We're not waiting for people to come to us. We are creating a want, a desire, a need, and we're executing on that. And I think that's the big trick of this, you know, home improvement or quick turn, or whatever you want to call this place, the space we're in, but it's really a direct response. And it's interesting to me, because when I think about it, and I think we take, at certain point, you take lead generation for granted, right? You develop a machine, it works, you have people doing it, the cogs turning. But when you sit back and I joke with my friends, and I think about, you know, can you imagine the day if we had no leads come in? You know, we're talking about generating 30, 40,000 brand new inquiries a month. You know, that's an incredible process in and onto itself. And it takes a lot of planning and a lot of strategy and a lot of knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you and I were talking, I don't know, it was mid last year, I think, or towards the end of last year, and you mentioned that you were going to step down from Dreamstyle, my immediate question was, well, wait a minute, what are you going to do? And I asked you to come and be a mastermind group facilitator for the Success Society. And we had our first meeting that you were a part of in March. And I kind of, where I wanted to go was, I wanted to ask you kind of like, what are your impressions based on your, I mean, you're still fairly new to our group, but you are not new to groups like this.
No.
I mean, you had famously, you and Gottlieb and Larry and a bunch of other people had the Big 12 group, which was essentially like Success Society, but you guys formed it yourself. But you also have a dealer network that sells your products that you developed through Reborn. So you have a lot of experience with dealers out there. And so I guess what I wanted to ask you, and maybe we should start positive first, is what in a group like a Success Society, in a group like your dealer network, what really helps people stand out and do well?
A willingness to learn. You know, I think even when I was back in school as a kid, but I've always tried to be a sponge and try to learn. And one thing that has really impressed me about this industry, and also the players in this industry, is the willingness to help and the willingness to share and the willingness to coach. And that is very, very unique in this space. You know, I sit on some other business boards and I'm involved with a bunch of other businesses, and most other industries don't have that.
Right.
And I think that comes from really is because this, in our industry, being direct sales, we are by nature people first type of individuals, right? We realize the power of relationships. We realize the power of camaraderie and knowledge. So that's helped this industry be what it is, because we, as large as this industry is, it really amazes me, is it's very, very small.
It is. Yeah.
And it's very small. And that has helped me in this space, you know, learning from others and being able to ask questions and people telling me. And I think that's what's has so much impressed me about your group is it really allows those businesses that are trying to reach a next level, no matter what size they are, but they're trying to reach, there's somebody in your group or in the Success Society that's either had that challenge, been there, accomplished that, and they're willing to share it. And, you know, that just is just overall better for the industry, because if we all get better at what we do, it's a better consumer experience. It's better for when they go and look at doing remodeling and they look for a company. It helps when people want to go sell their business, and it's brought a lot of private equity and private money into this space. So all in all, everybody benefits.
Yeah. So why don't people, this is a loaded question and I get that, but why don't people use the resources that are available?
I think there's a couple areas there. Number one's arrogance. You know, there are people out there that own businesses in this space that just simply think they are the best at what they do. And what I can tell you, knowing all from the largest company into the space all the way down the list to start going down, I know many of those owners very personally, and they are not that way.
Right.
You know, from a gentleman that owns a $800 to $1 billion business, there's no arrogance. It's checked at the door. Now, we all come as an entrepreneur, as a successful entrepreneur, we carry a certain sense of arrogance, but we can check that at the door. And I think there's a lot of businesses in this space that can't do, or people that can't do that yet. I also think there are people that are in this space that don't understand how to get out of their own way and start working on their business. They get so stuck in the grind, and they're so stuck in the day-to-day of what's going on and the firefighting, that while they want to learn and they want to implement, they just can't get out of their own way. So that's another area where a lot of, you know, younger, newer entrepreneurs have to learn is you have to look at yourself as a forward-thinking, strategic advisor to your business rather than a person that's in your business pedaling the bike every day. And until they can make that shift, their business becomes, you know, somewhat static, and they get a lot of frustration. So I think those are probably the two key things that I see. Oh,
those are great. Yeah. And I've seen all the same things.
Yeah.
How do they start making that shift? How do you start to build enough confidence where you can say, you know, I could start being a strategic thinker in my business. I could start to step away from my business. I could start to take, I have talked about for years and years and years, for lack of a better name, I've called it my library strategy, because I used to go to the Huntington Beach Library for a day. And that day was just about strategy. It was just about thinking. It was not about being in the business, but it was one of the hardest things to do, because the minute you walk in the door, like even before you walk in the door, your mind is screaming at you and telling you, what are you doing? You're such a loser. You're going to go to the library today. You have a business. Go get to work. But the work I was going to do in there was the most important work.
Absolutely.
For my business. But so how do you make that shift?
And my story is similar. Wasn't Huntington Beach, because I live, you know, south of that a bit. But yes, it was checking myself out of the business, going to a quiet space where nobody would bother me. And, you know, like you and me back in those days, there wasn't even cell phones. So
no.
A little bit easier to check out.
Yeah.
Unless the pager went off. But it's actually remembering why they got into the business in the first place. Because most people come into this business with a goal. Right. They came, and it could be a financial goal. It could be a freedom goal. It could be there's a bunch of different reasons why they started their business, and quickly they forget that goal. So I think it's number one, remembering why you started your business, and then shifting your mindset. You have to put some things in place, right? I mean, if you're a smaller business and you're the lead generator, the salesperson, the installer, the project manager, and you're the finance guy, you're not going to be set up to really get your business to the next level. But if you're able to start delegating things out, not abdicating responsibilities, but delegating responsibilities out and have the correct checks and balances, then next it's starting to make appointments with yourself. And they don't have to be a lot. People think, oh, I got to go take a day. No, you don't have to take a day. Take an hour. Take an hour a week. Whatever that time is, but make that time and make that a commitment that you're going to start working on improving and strategizing and planning for your business rather than just coming in and getting stuck in the grind day in and day out.
Because it is easy to get stuck in the grind. The business will take over your life if you allow it to. And I always suggest starting with half a day. You know, don't even go to your office in the morning. Start somewhere else and go from whatever time you start, 8 o'clock to noon. And there you go. You got half a day. You're not going to miss all that much. But I think it's the mental side of it that tells us, that fights with us essentially and says, go sell something or go make a lead or go do this or go do that. But instead, what you want to be thinking about is, like you said, you want to think about leverage. You want to think about, how do I build a sales team? You know, how do I increase my lead sources from just 2 to 12?
When we're early in the business or we're early, we go, there's an internal struggle. You know, like you mentioned, generate a lead and do all that. But there's an internal struggle where we feel anxious about what's going on in the business. A lot of that anxious is really coming from an insecurity. And what we have to realize is, if we can shift that drive, that feeling, whether it's anxiousness, to passion about growing the business, then we can start getting our minds to shift. And, you know, early on, I used to tell a lot of people, myself included, and also some of our management, is sometimes when you're trying to get yourself out, you have to double down. Meaning that if you're working 70 hours a week already and you're stuck in the grind and you just can't see a way out, you may have to start putting in a Saturday and a Sunday just for that strategy day until you can actually get yourself out of that grind and that pressure that happens during the normal week. And that's what I had to do, right? I had to actually create more time. And there's sacrifices that have to be met. You know, there's family sacrifices that have to be met, and there's other things in your life you have to sacrifice. But if you can look there's one thing about people in this space that is very impressive is we're drivers, right? We are make things happen kind of people. So if you have that confidence and you can double down, get that extra day, take that Saturday, take that Sunday, whatever it is, plan yourself out of the grind, you will reap the benefits. Then you can bring that back into your normal week. And it's about taking back control.
Yeah. You know, and that's part of the reason why I always start with, what do you want? What do you want? Because people will say all the time, well, I want a 10 million. I talk about this all the time because I still hear it from people. You know, it's like, I want a $10 million business. Well, why do you want a $10 million business? They can't give you a good reason. It's a nice number is ultimately what it comes down to. It's just, you know, if I do $10 million, I'm going to make a lot of money.
No. And all my problems are solved.
Yeah. But no. No, we're trying to save a $12 million company right now that's got pretty good underlying financials, but we're trying to save this business now from bankruptcy. They're doing $12 million. And they made some, you know, they made some poor decisions along the way. There's a lot of abdication of responsibility. There is a lot of ego involved, and you just got to kind of peel away at that stuff. So just having a $10 or $12 million business is not going to solve all of your problems. And in some cases, it will make your problems dramatically worse.
And I think for me, when we really started about this path of taking the business from, you know, I mean, at the time it was $20 million, but taking the $20 million business and really blowing it up, it was more than just the dollars, right? It was really thinking about, what did we want from this business, my brother and myself and my parents? And it was about, you know, what did I want personally in my life? Well, who did I want to be known as? What did I want to have accomplished? It was, you know, for me, freedom with my family, having the time to do what I wanted to do, with 4 kids and 3 grandchildren. But it was really, I want to say, for lack of a better word, materializing or putting reality or realizing the items I wanted. And it wasn't just about the money, because you can accomplish the tangible things without the money. You know, at $10 million, at some point you can have enough money that the money doesn't become the issue.
Right.
So I think it's really starting to put those things front and foremost, like you said, what do you want from the business? And driving everything towards that goal. And just shifting your thought, put it on your wall, put it in front of you, put it in your wallet, pick it up, read it every day. Whatever you need to do to remind yourself why you get up in the morning and what you do in the morning, make it that goal. And then once you have those goals, you realize dealing with the day-to-day of the business doesn't help me achieve those goals. Right? Dealing with the upset client or the fire, the flood, the lead gen, whatever it is, the AP, the payroll, whatever it is every day, that none of that helps me achieve the goal. But what helps me achieve the goal is planning, strategizing, implementing, improving, driving. That helps me achieve that goal. So you shift, your mind shifts.
Yeah.
And I think that's important.
I guess when you're stuck in the grind of it, it's hard to see outside of it. But I think you're right. This is a big thing that we teach our Success Society members is, what is it? Go back to what it is that you want. And ultimately, and you said it as you were talking about what you and your brother and your family wanted. Ultimately, I think it comes down to time and money. And money buys time. And so the better your business does financially, the more time you can buy yourself, because now you bring on a team of people. So if you're doing sales, now you replace yourself as a salesperson. You just bought yourself time. If you're doing all the marketing in your business, you got to be there every day to do that job. But if you can now pass it off to somebody else, now you just bought yourself some time. And again, why money and why time? Because money and time is all about freedom, which I think for entrepreneurs is like our number one ambition, is to just be free and be able to get up in the morning and do whatever the hell we want to do. If we want to go to work, we go to work. Great. If we don't want to go to work, we don't go to work that day.
And the beauty about our business, our industry, is it provides that.
Yeah.
You know, if you really think about our industry compared to a lot of other industries, number one, we don't require big bank loans to fund our businesses, right? Yeah. Businesses can easily cash flow themselves. Maybe if you're going through a major growth, you want to bring in some other cash. But from a generalization standpoint, our businesses cash flow themselves. Our businesses are the success of our business is completely driven by ourselves. It's one of the few industries where, if you really simplify it, you always can go out and get more business. Now, I get it. Lead generation could come rocky or whatever and get harder and challenging. But those are just small bumps that you have to solve. Right. But it's one of the few industries, and we control our customer's decision, right? We control who buys from us, and people say, well, not everybody's going to buy from me. I get it. But generally speaking, this business is going to sell 1 in 3 people every single day. So it's a very predictable business model, and not many industries can say that. You know, not many industries. You go open up a retail store and you're hoping people walk in the front door. You're not forcing or making people walk into your front door. Yeah. With our business, we can go stand out. I remember the day when we were growing the business and we needed leads. What did I do? I made flyers. I knocked on doors and I met people in garages on their Saturday, and I got leads and we made more sales and the business grew. I mean, it's very much that easy or possible. So
yeah.
That's what I just love about this space. It's you can achieve anything you want using this type of industry.
And there's so many places to go. You know, I talked with one of your dealers the other day, and they were talking about the Costco program. We've got Justin Bartley, who's another mastermind group facilitator at Success Society, who just got involved with the Costco program. There's the big box stores, there's going and knocking on doors, there's events. You can go do a wine and cheese show, you can go do a wedding show even. There was talk of that last week. We were at an industry event, and Samantha McGinnis, who's really good at shows and events. I don't know. Do you know her?
I don't
Samantha?
Think so.
No, she did a thing for Success Society last year, but super smart. She used to work for David Moore, running his show and event department up in Toronto. And anyway, but there's so many ways in this business to go and make a lead. And it sucks. You know, what sucks about this business is also what makes it great. You start every day with zero. We got no sales. But guess what? If we don't have any leads, we could do what you said. We can print flyers, we can go knock on doors, and we can make business happen. Some of that's ugly, though. How do you deal with the ugliness of it? I mean, it's so much easier to just call up a internet marketing company, just call up, you know, Truvolve and just say, hey, Truvolve, build a website for me and start driving me leads. Okay, great. They'll do that. And that's easy. But that's not enough to build a whole business.
That's a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
You think of marketing, it's a puzzle. And there's a lot of pieces. And when you start, maybe it's a 10-piece puzzle. And then when you get to the size that we were, maybe it's a 1,000-piece puzzle. But it's those are just pieces of the marketing puzzle. And there is no quick fix, pay the guy, and the leads come in. You know, there just isn't. And I think the reason, a lot of the reason why I think a lot of the businesses are struggling today in lead gen, especially a lot of the smaller businesses, is a lot of the smaller businesses came into the space during COVID or right pre-COVID and rode the COVID wave. And most importantly, they rode the aggregator lead gen wave. And that whole period of time really made our industry weak. And, you know, we've seen that, you know, you've been in business as long as I have, or you have, you've seen this come again. You know, it's come during different areas where, you know, I kind of call it the make versus take market. Mm-hmm. You know, we were most definitely in a take market, and we've been in a take market before, but now we're in a make market. You know, there are aggregators out there, there is lead gen, but we have to be in a make market. We have to make those leads occur rather than taking the business.
Psst. Hey, you over there. So look, there's a rumor going around. Some of the most successful home improvement businesses aren't just lucky, they're part of something bigger. Some sort of secret group. Have you heard whispers of the Wealthy Contractor Success Society? Look, I found a way you could take a peek inside. Visit theentrydoor.info. Here, take it. Theentrydoor.info. Hurry before the door closes again.
So I think that's where it's becoming a lot of the conversation around marketing, and it's become to get more expensive because we're fighting, but that's typical in a make market, it becomes a little more expensive. But it doesn't have to stay that way. There's many people in this industry, in this space right now, that still have very low marketing costs, that are still driving high volume, and that are still growing on a regular basis.
Yeah.
It's just understanding the puzzle pieces and realizing, you know, what pieces do I need to bring into my puzzle?
So we were at an industry event last week. And funny enough, you know, 2 years ago, if you go to an industry event, there was probably every aggregator was there. I think maybe there was one out of 30 sponsors, maybe there was one. And so the aggregator thing has become very interesting. Yeah, because COVID, wow, it was so easy. There were so many leads that these aggregators they were able to print money. But now that it's not that easy, and this business historically, Vince, is a make market business.
Yes.
Take is a, do you know, or do you remember like the mix of take versus make at Reborn? Say when you were smaller, do you remember the mix?
It's always been more on make versus take.
Yeah.
Always.
Would you say it was what, like 60-40, 70-30?
Yeah, I'd probably say 70-30.
70-30.
And it changed depending on what we were doing that year. If we were pressing growth, it would be on the make side. But, you know, we used showrooms and we used events where we would just open up and wait for people to come in, but those were very good leads. Those would be kind of like more like a take versus going out and eliciting a direct response, which would be a make. And so you have to, this is a make direct response business.
Business, yeah.
Right. So don't get lazy and think you can just pay somebody else to do your lead gen. I think the aggregator model while it was good, we just, like I said, we became weak and we became dependent on it. And when you take that away, now you're left to say, wow, what do I do next? The smarter thing in hindsight, if I look back, would have been to still keep that aggregated market at a very, very small percentage of the overall business and force the business to generate the leads in other ways. You know, and COVID screwed us all up. We couldn't do the events, right? We got lazy. We shifted over. Leads were cheap. Aggregators were coming out with paper performance plans, guaranteeing us our marketing costs. And it was just an easy ride, an easy wave to sit on the top of. But that's not the case anymore. And we might come back to those days, but the warning for everybody is I wouldn't wait and I would not make that my reliance anymore. Learn from our mistakes.
Yeah. One of the strategies that you guys absolutely killed, and I followed you guys, and we didn't know each other well back then, but I followed it, was your showroom strategy, where you were putting on seminars. Now, before I ask you details about that, what percentage of your dealers now have what could pass as a showroom? Do you know about what that number is?
I don't, but I'm pretty sure all of them have some sort of showroom.
Yeah. I would say in Success Society, it's probably, I'm going to say like 70-80%. And so I would imagine many of the listeners, I would probably 60-70% of the listeners have some sort of showroom, or at least something that they can pretend to be a showroom. But can you talk a little bit about that strategy? Because I think that's it's such a great strategy. We've recommended it to so many clients. Now, a lot of people don't do it. But anyway, can you talk a little bit about that?
The strategy behind it is because even though we're direct response, we have to brand ourselves, right? We have to create a brand. And the stronger the quicker and stronger we can make that brand, it helps our direct response. And so, you know, there's two, as you know, and most people listening, there's two types of marketing. There's branding and direct response, right? There's just two different ways of marketing. So we would use the showrooms, or we would think what we wanted to do is we wanted to become the expert. We wanted to be recognized not only as the company to do the work, but the expert doing the work. And we focused these events not on our brand, but on our knowledge. And we positioned it in such a way that we wanted to educate the consumer. Now, it was self-serving, because if we're providing the education, we're providing the knowledge would obviously circle back and point back to us as being the obvious choice. But it was very much an educational experience. And if you think about it, it was almost just like the intention was putting on our own private home show. You know, if you go to a consumer home show, they always have an expert talking about a product or a service or how to choose a contractor or, you know, pitfalls in remodeling or whatever the topic will be, because they want to be the expert and draw in the consumers to get that knowledge. We did the same thing. And we would then, and it grew to actually having other vendors participate, help fund it. And, you know, we would get 160 plus. Now, we had a very large showroom, but 160 plus people captive from 10 to 3, you know, 5 hours of captivity, and they would stay. The majority of them, we get 90% of the people would stay the full 5 hours. And it really helped us brand the business. It generated a lot of leads, which obviously closed at a very, very,
very high rate. Yeah.
And then we used it in other areas of leverage. The second way we used it, it morphed into was into rehash and a closing tool, because what we would strategically position during those events were appointments for either rehash or help to close existing leads that, well, you can call them all rehash, to help close other appointments. And we would invite Mr. and Mrs. Jones in to meet with, you know, Bob, the sales rep, to go over their project. But if you can imagine them coming in, unbeknownst to them, that there's 160 homeowners in our showroom, there's cooking demonstrations, there's other product demonstrations. There's all sorts of things. The Better Business Bureau would be there. We'd have the contractors board there, finance companies there. That generated its own hype in itself with helping to close those other deals.
Yeah. So essentially, this was a workshop, seminar, how to hire the right contractor. And that kind of stuff is, I mean, when I first learned that strategy, God, I learned it from Dan Kennedy, God, probably 30 years ago. That's why I always have a book. And in all of my businesses, even my home improvement businesses, I always had a book of how to hire a contractor. And those were some of the best leads that you could get, because there people were like, okay, I don't understand this home improvement thing. I've never bought a kitchen before. I've never bought a roof before. I've never bought windows before. All I hear are horror stories. But now you do a seminar on, hey, you know, here's how you pick the right contractor.
Yes.
Come to Reborn Cabinets for a few hours. It's a great way. And by the way, Vince would get 160 people, but if you got 10 people there, you're going to make 8 leads and you're probably going to close 6 of them.
Yes. And we did in our other branches where we didn't have the large showrooms. I mean, the one particular showroom we had in Orange County was 10,000 square feet. So, you know, it was a little over the top, but in the other branches where we had, you know, 1500 square feet or 1200 square feet of showroom, a couple vignettes, and we would bring in, you know, 12, 15 people. And it was equally as important. And, you know, it was interesting because one of the sessions was on hiring or choosing a contractor is what we called it, right? And we would show, you know, when you look across and you see all these ads, they all look the same, they all look great, but we would dive into showing them how to research those customers, looking on the Better Business Bureau. Yeah. If there's a contractors board agency in their market, how to check their license, looking at how old their license was, making sure that they're, you know, we would point out things like 40 years in business, and you go to their license and their license says they started it 5 years ago. Well, who's lying there? So we would kind of explain all that to educate the consumer. And hey, it was not Reborn, but obviously if they went to Reborn's website and saw that the license number had been there since 1983 and the Better Business Bureau, we were A+ rated and all these other things pointed to the same natural conclusion of we were the best choice. And I think that it was very helpful. And the customer saw that as very educational and informative because it's very confusing to them how to actually, who do they call?
And by the way, one of the most important things, and you just touched on it there, one of the most important things, and this goes to also the whole controversy, let's say, behind a one call close, is you have to believe that you are the best choice for your customer. And what your job is, if you really believe that and you really care about your customer, is your job is to keep them from doing business with the person that you know is cutting corners, you know is going to screw them. And it's like shocking to me how people will, they're, oh, no, we're not a one-call close, we're not high pressure, we're not, you know, all the things they say about a one-call close. And that they completely miss the point. Nobody I know that does a one call close the right way is high pressure. This is not the 1960s. This is not the Tin Man days. You know, this is, if I really care about my customer, I can't let them go to save $1,000 and work with the Chuck in the truck guy that may or may not perform on the job. We know we're going to perform. And so Mr. and Mrs. Homer, we're really the best choice. Yeah, we're going to cost you more, but we are the best choice. And if you can't have that attitude and you don't have that belief, people will see right through it. This strategy won't work for you.
Correct. You're 100% correct in everything you said. We felt the same way. We were protecting the customer from making the wrong decision by selling them the product. And I think to dive a little bit into what you said, number one, we weren't the highest price. We were the right price for
the product.
Yeah,
that's right.
Mm-hmm. Right? There are things that make up a price. You know, we weren't making 100% profit on these projects. I wish we did, but we don't. You know, in this space, if you're making, you know, 6 to 15 to 20% net profit, if you're making 20%, 25%, you're like in a great, you know, top 10. Most people aren't going to be that good. They're going to be in the 15s, the 18s, you know, whatever.
Well, actually, no, the majority are under five.
That's true. That's
15
true.
To 20 is like nice. Ideal.
Yeah.
I know you were trying, you were being nice.
But, I was being nice. Yeah. But okay, so let's just take 10% as a number.
Yeah.
So of everything I do in my business and everything it takes to run my business and everything it takes to actually put the product in and install it, and I'm only making 10%. And the other guy comes in and he's 20% less than me. And I'm larger than him and I have equally as good a buying power. How is that possible? Because he's not providing the same level of service that you are, whether it be insurance, whether it be the quality installer, whether it be the correct operating process and the project management team and the structure and the software and everything you're doing. I don't care what it is. How can he do it for 20% less than you? It's wrong. He can't. He can't. And that's why we have to educate the customer. And if we firmly believe that and we educate ourselves and we have confidence in our price, then we have passion when we're selling it. Number one. And then we realize that we have to educate them and show the customer why the price is right. And I hate when people say we're a one call close. We are not a one call close. We have the ability to meet a client, provide the exact price during a 90-minute window or 2-hour window, and we owe it, and the client owes us a yes or no. And we are confident enough in our price, in our product, in our services that we present, that we will ask the client to make a decision. That's not a one-call close. That just happens to be that when we put the price, we ask for the business. Why wouldn't you develop a business that could create and offer the price in one visit? And we all agree that when we put the price on the table, we should ask for the business. So essentially, everybody listening is a one-call close, whether they're putting the price on the first visit or the second visit. They're one calling it and asking for the business when they give the price.
Yeah. At some point.
Yeah, at some point.
Unless if they're emailing it.
Well, yeah, that's a whole other story, right?
Yeah. Let's not. Here's what we'll say, though. Nobody that's rich in this business will ever email an estimate to a customer.
I can tell you, we didn't get to, you know, 9 figures in our business by $100 million by emailing the price. I can tell you that. And to your point earlier, when presented wrong, and there are people in this business that do that still, right? There are businesses in our space that, you know, the rep can't leave until he gets the deal and he has to call and he has to do, you know, all these more aggressive tactics. But that's not the majority. That's the minority.
No, yeah.
And I think we just have to sit back and realize that. And I realize all those that might be listening to this podcast from the design build side might be thinking that we're the devil because we actually ask for the business during the call, one during the visit. But they should be doing it too.
They should be. Yeah.
And it's confidence.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about Success Society here. So we're going to do something very cool. And we're actually going to be in Vince's neck of the woods. We're going to be in Newport Beach, California in July.
Beautiful time to be in Newport Beach,
oh,
I'll tell you.
Perfect time to be there. Yeah. Not only will we be in Newport Beach, but you will get to meet a cool group of people, including Mr. Vince Nardo. And what we are offering is a discovery day. So the first day of our Success Society intensive, where we'll have, you know, most of our members will be there and within their mastermind groups. The first day is welcome. We're going to open it up to potential new members, and you get to experience it live and in person and meet other people in the group and meet our great facilitators like Vince, like Justin Bartley, like Charlie Gundell, Scott Berman. Just we have a really fantastic group of seasoned business owners that are leading mastermind groups. So if this is something that you are interested in, you can go to theentrydoor.info. And we'll put that in the show notes also. But it's theentrydoor.info. And I hope you guys are interested, or a few of you will be interested in leveling up, being surrounded by other people that are in similar businesses to yours, and, you know, getting advice from, you know, tactical, real world, day-to-day advice from people like Vince, who have been there and done that and have built great companies.
And let me just add to that, Brian, there's a lot of people that are going to say, wow, I don't need that. What do I get from that? And you know, you mentioned earlier about the group that I was in with a bunch of friends that, you know, business associates, we became friends. We don't know what we don't know. I think coming out and being in a group of like-minded individuals that see our business the best way is a fast track to success. You know, I'm like you said, I'm chairing one of your groups, and to hear the questions in those groups, you know, from, you know, I'm looking for a new CRM. You know, what have you tried? And, or, you know, how do you deal with this? There was a question once, you know, that came on our group was, you know, my customers are, I do my financing with zero down. I'm getting a lot of last minute late cancellations. How do I deal with that? And number one, here's what I can guarantee that your folks listening is it'll save them money in the long run, because they're going to get advice. Now, granted, it might be legal. They have to validate with their own attorney, but they're going to get advice that's going to fast track their decision-making process from people that have been there. And, you know, with me, and I'm sure with the other gentlemen that are chairing other groups, it's not us preaching and telling what we did. It's actually very little of that. All we're doing is kind of like saying, you know, offering direction or kind of sanity checking what people are saying. That's really what we do, is we just sanity check and say, yep, that's the right one. Or have you thought of it this way? And people will get 100%. I mean, I just look at the group and the people that are in my group and watch their businesses grow. They will all say it's because of this group, you know, that they gained knowledge. You know, someone brought up once, I mean, even I've gotten things. I mean, I got things from one of the businesses in there that's only doing like $6 million a year. And I'm like, holy crap, that's a damn good idea. You know, and it's hearing those things. You know, one of the ones was, how do I motivate my salespeople? And, you know, we all do spiffs, we all do programs. And this guy had a really, really cool way of doing it. And it's self-motivated and it was working. And it was like, wow.
Well, it goes back to what we were saying at the very beginning of this, is what makes the difference is you got to be open to learning. You got to leave your ego at the door. And when you're open to learning and you ask good questions, you're going to get answers, and those answers are shortcuts. Why try and figure, why take months and months and months to figure something out when all you have to do is go to a group of, you know, 8, 10, 12 other business owners that are in the same business as you and just say, hey, how do I do this? And then five people will tell you, oh, I did it like this, and this is what happened when I did it. Oh, by the way, I have a whole playbook on that that I could share with you. And it's like, wow, you know, why wouldn't you want to be a part of something? I mean, look, me and Vince, obviously, you know, we have a soft spot, me more than Vince probably, but we have a soft spot for Success Society and for Wealthy Contractor. But man, if you can't join Wealthy Contractor Success Society, find another group, find somewhere where you can collaborate with people. And I always say, you know, the entrepreneur is the loneliest person on the planet. Nobody gets us. Nobody understands us until you get in a room like that. You know, like with you guys in the Big 12 and being in a room. And what's crazy about you guys too is that that group started, you guys started it when you were, how big were you? 20-ish million?
Yeah. We were all very small.
You were all small. Yes. Relatively speaking. Everybody in that group went to nine figures, and I think one or two went even to a billion.
Yeah.
Now, was that just
that coincidence?
Coincidence?
Yeah. No.
Or was something happening in that group that helped facilitate that?
Yeah. And we're still friends today. I mean, I don't want to go through and name all the guys in the group. You named a few, but I can pick up the phone and call anybody, just sanity check something with them.
Right.
So here's what I do want to also say about your groups are, this is who it's not for. It's not for the person that's not going to take the information and do something with it. And it's not for the person that's going to sit there and just listen. It's, you know, you have to participate. You get what you give.
And if you're willing to want to take your business to the next level, and you're really just a little stuck where you are right now, or want to just bounce ideas off of a group of people that know, think of this like your own personal advisory board without the cost of an advisory board, right? And, or, you know, you've got your own group of people that you can develop a long relationship with. You can sanity check your ideas. You can get out of the rut of doing what you're doing every single day and really learn the way and the tools to take your business to the next level.
And you're invited. I'll leave it at that. And you're invited. Go to theentrydoor.info and see if it's right for you. We'd love to have you. Check it out. Vince, thank you. Appreciate you. And for everybody listening, until next time, this is Brian Kaskavalsian, and this is the Wealthy Contractor Podcast.
Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. For insights on skyrocketing your home improvement business and accelerating your journey to the success, wealth, and freedom you've always dreamed about, be sure to get your free copy of my best-selling book, The 7 Secrets to Becoming a Wealthy Contractor, at www.thewealthycontractor.com. And don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. See you next time.